Meandering Down the Murray, My Time as a Riverboat Captain, by James Cryer. Published in the August 2018 edition of Afloat magazine. Read by Tim Stackpool. While not wanting to compare myself with Mark Twain, he and I have a lot in common. America may have the Mississippi, Europe may have the Rhine, but Australia has the Murray. And while shorter than its American sister and longer than its European counterpart, it ranks, in my opinion, alongside its Northern Hemisphere sisters. It is a river connected, by its very heart and soul, to the vast catchment area it serves, where it meanders through the hearts and minds of the pioneers and early settlers, and where romance and legend and fact and fiction become inextricably intertwined. It was into this river's warm embrace, stretching more than 2,500 kilometres and navigable for about 2,000, that we were about to plunge, just outside Echuca. Not for us some pathetic little tinny scooting along like a leaf on the breeze. We decided that nothing less than about 30 tons would do the trick nicely. And given that both Ray and I knew how to drive a car, both forwards and backwards, and that Ray had gained additional practice at tight corner manoeuvring while driving his newly acquired hotted-up Mini Cooper S up and down Allison Avenue outside the University of New South Wales, when he should have been attending economics lectures. Furthermore, I had helmed yachts over many years and prided myself on being able to guide a boat while facing backwards, gazing at one's wake. If it was crooked, you lost marks. So it was, with a sense of confidence, that we grasped the steering wheel of our 30-ton behemoth, thinking nothing of such minor details as turning circles, which exceeded the width of the river, or the fact that you can only berth, they call it park, a vessel while going upstream. Now just think about that for a moment. You may be going downstream when you see a parking spot. The procedure for parking on the left-hand bank is the mirror reverse to parking on the right-hand bank, so you have to learn and unlearn at the same time, and remember which one to do when. Also, that when extricating yourself off the bank, you have to reverse downstream and then proceed upstream, even if you want to go downstream. Is that clear? Our instructor didn't help when, after several hours of tuition, he expressed frustration that we hadn't really filled him with confidence about being let loose in charge of a 30-ton vessel on the fast-flowing waters of his beloved river. I suspect he came from that 19th-century school of parenting which said that if you accuse your kids often enough of being totally hopeless, incompetent buffoons who will never amount to anything, they'll inevitably grow into fine, upstanding young citizens. Male ego is a terribly fragile thing, and so Ray and I nursed our bruised egos and licked our wounds, but more importantly, we swatted furiously the 40-odd page operations manual well into the night, while Pip caught up with her reading the 1954 Woman's Day article on the coronation of Queen Elizabeth that she found in the ship's library, seemingly oblivious to the dramatic events unfolding up on the bridge. The prospect of allowing 30 tons of steel to float out of control downstream for 2,000-odd kilometres and then be unceremoniously disgorged at Goolwa into the Southern Ocean, where it would become a shipping hazard, perhaps for centuries, was too much for our feeble minds to contemplate. And so it came to pass the following morning, like a couple of 16-year-old kids going for their L-plates, Ray and I, after putting the good ship Luxury 5, a romantic name if ever there was one, through her paces, seemed to get the instructor's tick of approval. I scraped through with a B-, whereas Ray got honours in backseat driving. But sadly, we were not the first of the great riverboat skippers. The fun and games started back in the 1850s, when the South Australian government offered a prize to the first shipowner who could navigate all the way up the Murray to its junction with the Darling, over 500 kilometres. A David and Goliath contest ensued between the 30-metre Lady Augusta and the 18-metre Mary Ann. The smaller craft won, but both were awarded some prize money, and the larger vessel eventually pushed further upstream to Echuca. So, in the interest of fair play, let's call it a dead heat. Little did either of them realise that their race opened the way for the Murray, and of course the Darling, to become arguably Australia's main thoroughfare for transport of wool and wheat for those two burgeoning industries. Some interesting armchair economics was soon at play, as the two states generating all the wealth, Victoria and New South Wales, had to pay a royalty to South Australia as the river flowed to the sea through that state. Whether or not SA was too greedy, who are we to judge, But it wasn't long before the Victorians realised Echuca was only a stone's throw, 200 kilometres from Melbourne, over nice flat country where it was easy to build a railway. And so it was that in 1864 it was goodnight nurse to Adelaide and hello sailor to Melbourne as inland Echuca rocketed up the charts as a major railhead and paddle steamer junction and soon became Australia's third busiest port. Sad to admit, I knew very little of all this before I embarked, but plying up and down these waters in the tracks of those early pioneers gives one an incredible insight into how Australia's economy evolved. Household names like Goldsborough of Melbourne and Mort of Sydney grew empires built on the ebb and flow of these mighty watery highways, not to forget the Darling, Murrumbidgee and Lachlan rivers. But back to life on board the good ship Luxury 5. There, everything was turned on its head. Ray did all the cooking and Pip lolled around looking like some latter-day mermaid draped in diaphanous silk and drifting in and out of the onboard spa. And me? One minute I was the proud skipper negotiating dangerous shawls, decked out in my captain's regalia. The next I was wearing a tea towel, consigned to the galley on washing up duty. But even that was not without stress. Pip, who, I guess technically as Ray's better half, was second in command, advised me not to do the washing up after dinner, but to let the dishes soak. This was directly at odds with my own better half, who has always told me in no uncertain terms, mind you, that she doesn't like coming out to face dirty dishes. I was caught like a rabbit in the headlights, uncertain of what to do, so I compromised and did half after dinner and the rest in the morning. Shipboard life certainly has its challenges. However, apart from that domestic dilemma, we all got on like the proverbial house on fire. The boat seemed to survive my frantic spinning of the steering wheel as we came around each bend. And bends there are in that neck of the woods, possibly the most meandering part of any river in Australia, as evidenced by the fact that we were 10 kilometres from Echuca by road, but over 20 kilometres by boat. And for amusement in between meals and drinks, we went on long bike rides each afternoon, and I swam across the river and back several times. This region of the Murray is bird heaven, with dozens of different breeds, from waterborne ones to flocks of galahs and cockatoos, sometimes as thick as locusts. It's also a photographer's paradise, especially at dawn and dusk when the limbs of the magnificent towering Red River gums are reflected in the still flowing waters. And so I'd love to say I've conquered the Murray, but traversing 600 of its over 2,000 kilometres is a stark reminder of what a vast country this is. You should visit this peaceful haven while you can. The natural harmony is being disturbed by accusations of water theft prompted by rationing, which is upsetting the vested interests of major stakeholders who seem to have been caught growing the wrong crops, over-irrigating, and falsifying their actual usage. Inevitably, these disputes will end in tears, and with the environment the loser. Sadly, this could be Tourism Australia's new slogan. See it now, before it's a dry riverbed. That was Meandering Down the Murray, My Time as a Riverboat Captain by James Cryer. First published in Afloat magazine in August 2018 and read by Tim Stackpole.